Blog Talk Radio.
Faces of Success Radio. Your girl, Miss Diamond.
Hey, world.
You've now tuned in to Miss Diamond on Interviews with the Stars. Yo, you just tuned in to your girl, Miss Diamond. Hey, young world. It's your girl, Miss Diamond. Interviews with the Stars. You've now tuned in. Let's go. You've now tuned in to Miss Diamond on Interviews with the Stars. Yo, you just tuned in to your girl, Miss Diamond. Hey, young world. It's your girl, Miss Diamond. Interviews with the Stars. You've now tuned in. Let's go.
Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Interviews with the Stars. Of course, I am your girl, Miss Diamond. I don't really need an introduction, but it is what it is. So I just want to say what's up to everybody who has tuned in to the show this week. Of course, I got some hot music lined up for you. Of course, I have an interesting hot topic today, which is going to be effective ways to communicate. Oh, some of y'all really need to learn that one. So I'm here for you today, and I'm going to teach you some things. And, of course, I always start my show off with dedicating it to someone who is going through something, someone special, someone's birthday. But this week I want to dedicate the show to Mr. Tracy Morgan. I mean, he's out of the hospital. He's looking good. He's doing better. So shouts out to him. And we just want to wish him the best and, you know, can't wait to see him back in front of our TV screens and hearing him on our radios. So also we have today's special guest, Mr. Wayne Lindsay, in the studio with our next hour, Interviews with the Stars. So stay tuned right here on Face of Success Radio. I am your host. Sit back, relax, chill, get you something to drink, and I'm ready. It's on. All right?
To the world, you notice I'm that kind of girl who loves her diamonds in white pearls. So you told me to jet set away in London, to sip on some tea, to surprise me with gifts from Tiffany. Oh, I love the way we live, and boy, but my daddy say you don't need that boy, so let's run. Feeling you give it like you got the key to my heart. If we'll ever touch and kiss, never knew a feeling like this. Pure bliss, pure bliss. Nobody can tear us apart. Baby, it's as good as it gets. Loving you will never be hard.
When the pilot closed the door, said it's time for liftoff. You said, what'd you choose me for? But don't ever wonder, 'cause you deserve the best. Once you reach the top, you'll never question why you Let's run away. Let's run away. Our friends say we're crazy, but we can't listen, baby. They never had it like this. They don't know what it is.
You're blessed, like you got the key to my heart. Simple as a touch and a kiss. Never knew a feeling like this. Nobody can tear us apart. Baby, it's as good as it gets. Loving you will never be hard. It's your
then Welcome back, welcome back. That was Guapale with Closer to My Dreams. And, of course, I want you all to try to reach for the stars. You know, the sky's the limit. You know, what other way to start the show with talking about your dreams and your goals? But understanding that in building relationships and building business relationships also, you have to effectively communicate. Okay, so first of all, if you want to chime in on this topic, you can hit me up on Facebook, you can follow me on Twitter, or you can even look at my pictures on Instagram by clicking Miss Diamond Hot Topics. Of course, I'd love to chat with you. I'd love to interact with you and see exactly how you feel about today's topic. So here we go with effective communication. When effective communication helps us all better understand a person or situation, and it also enables us to resolve differences, build trust and respect, and create environments where creative ideas, problem-solving, affection, and caring can flourish. I mean, as simple as communication seems, much of what we try to communicate to others and what others try to communicate to us definitely gets misunderstood, which can cause conflict and frustration in personal and professional relationships, really. I mean, by learning these effective communication skills, you can better connect with your spouse, your kids, your friends, and, of course, your coworkers, definitely. How many of us have been at work and, you know, we've said something to a coworker and they perceived it in the wrong way, or even vice versa? You know, someone has said something to us and we were a little taken back by it. Well, if we all learned effective communication skills, we probably wouldn't have this issue. But, hey, why communication? Well, I'm here to tell you. In this information age, we have to send, receive, and process huge numbers of messages every day. But effective communication is more about, you know, exchanging information. It's also about understanding emotions behind the information. Hello. Effective communication can improve relationships at home, work, and in social situations by deepening your connections to others and improving teamwork, decision-making, and problem-solving. It enables you to communicate even negative or difficult messages without creating conflict or even destroying trust. I mean, that's major. Effective communication combines a set of skills, including nonverbal communication, attentive listening, and the ability to manage stress in the moment, and in the capacity to recognize and understand your own emotions and those of the person you're communicating with, really. I mean, while effective communication is a learned skill, it's more effective when it's spontaneous. I don't know about you, but to me, it's very, very important to know exactly what you want, know how you want to get it, and know what you're feeling, you know, and therefore you'll be able to effectively communicate this to others if you understand that feeling yourself. I mean, of course, it takes time and effort to develop these skills and become an effective communicator, but the more effort and practice you put into it, the more instinctive and spontaneous your communication skills will be. But who am I to say? But in a minute, I'll be back. And we're going to talk about listening, okay? Tips for effective listening, nonverbal communication, and managing stress. Oh, boy. While managing stress, you can definitely communicate to others exactly what's going on with you and how they should handle you at that time. But, Dwayne Lindsay, you don't want to miss that. So stay tuned right here on Face Up Success. I am your host, Miss Diamond, right here on Interviews with the Stars.
It's just a fly love song. What? Are we living in a dream world? Are your eyes still green, girl? I know you're sick and tired of arguing, but you can't keep it bottled in. Jealousy, we gotta swallow it. Your heart and mind, baby, follow it. Smile, happiness, you can model it. And when you feel opposite, I just want you to know, your whole being is beautiful. I'ma do the best I can do, 'cause I'm my best when I'm with you.
Come close to me, baby.
find your bags, love. I know in the past, love, has been sort of hard on you. But I see the God in you. I just want to nurture it. Though this love may hurt a bit, we dealing with this water, love. You even give my daughter love. I want to build a tribe with you, protect and provide for you. Truth is, I can't hide from you. The pimp in me may have to die with you. To discover me, I just want you to put trust in me. I kinda laugh when you cussing me. The aftermath is you touching me. It's destiny that we connected, girl. You and I, we can affect the world. I'm tired of the fast lane. I want you to have my last name. Yeah, love.
Shake, 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 shake what it do.
On the beach in the streets where Joe was. Hold up, my phone's ringing up. I'ma hang up and call the machine right back. I gotta get this off of my mind.
It wasn't worth my time. Oh. I'm leaving you behind.
Yeah, cause I need a real love in my life.
Save this recording because I'm never coming back home.
Uh-huh.
Baby, I'm gone.
Don't you know I gotta shake you off?
Cause my love, it ain't the same. And you keep on playing games like you know I'm here to stay. Just like the cats on commercial life. Really gotta get up out of here and go somewhere.
Gotta make that call
for somebody who appreciates all the love I give. Boy, I gotta
shake it off.
Gotta do what's best for me, baby, and that means I gotta
shake it off.
Watch this.
Everybody, welcome back. Welcome back to the show. And if you just tuned in, of course, I am your host, Ms. Diamond, and you are listening to Interviews with the Stars. This segment is called Hot Topics, okay? So today's chosen hot topic is effective ways to communicate. I mean, how important is communication to you and your relationship with your family, your friends, and your coworkers? To me, it's extremely important. That I effectively communicate. And when I fail or when I drop the ball, then I try to learn ways to figure out how that just doesn't happen again, okay? But, you know, nobody's perfect, so I understand that people out here in the world may have trouble effectively communicating. So that's why I am here to help you, okay? I am here to give you a few tips on how to effectively communicate and how to listen when communicating. But, again, if you want to chime in on this topic, I would love to hear from you. So hit me up on Facebook. My name is Ms. Diamond Hot Topic. Send me a friend request. Send me an inbox, and I'd love to chat it up with you about it. You can hit me up on the Facebook Success Radio page as well. I am your host, Ms. Diamond, okay? All right, so my special guest for next hour, you won't want to miss that interview. It's going to be with Mr. Wayne Lindsay. Live right here in the studio in about 45 minutes. So just, you know, chill, relax, and sit back and listen to these wonderful ways to effectively communicate. So right now I'm going to talk about listening, okay? Listening is one of the most important aspects of effective communication. I mean, successful listening means to not just understand the words of the information being communicated, but also understanding how the speaker feels about what they're communicating. I mean, effective listening can make the speaker feel heard and understood, which can help build a stronger and deeper connection between you. It can also create an environment where everyone feels safe to express ideas, opinions, and feelings, or plan and problem solve in creative ways. It can also save time by helping clarify information, I mean, avoiding conflicts and misunderstandings. We all just don't need that. If you clearly listen when somebody is telling you something, you won't convey the message the wrong way if you're listening the right way. You understand what I'm saying? I'm sure you do. Also, effective listening can relieve negative emotions. When emotions are running high, if a speaker feels that he or she has been truly heard, it can help to calm them down. It can help them relieve negative feelings and also allow for real understanding or problem solving to begin. I mean, how many times have you been in a debate, a conversation, or a situation with someone, and they're screaming and yelling? How, you know, are you really listening to them, or are you really focused on what they're saying or how they're saying it to you? I'm going to give you a few tips, you know, for effective listening, okay? So if your goal is to fully understand and connect with the other person, listening effectively will often come naturally. If it doesn't, you can remember the following tips. You know, the more that you practice them, the more satisfying and rewarding your interactions with others will become. So focus fully on the speaker. His or her body language and other nonverbal cues. If you're daydreaming, checking text messages, you're writing in your book, you're almost certain to miss nonverbal cues in this conversation, really. I mean, if you find it hard to concentrate on some speakers, try repeating their words over in your head. That, for me, will reinforce their message to help you stay focused. What other better way to effectively listen by trying to stay focused on what the speaker is actually saying instead of assuming you know what they're going to say? Oh, my God, I hate that. Also, avoid interrupting or trying to redirect the conversation to your concerns by saying something like, if you think that's bad, let me tell you what happened to me. Really. Listening is not the same as waiting for your turn to talk. You can't concentrate on what someone's saying if you're forming what you're going to say next. Often the speaker can read your facial expressions and know your mind is somewhere else and not really where it needs to be. I mean, how rude is that, you know? Also, avoid seeming judgmental. I know that is so hard for so many of us, even myself, for being judgmental. But, you know, we're all human and we all make mistakes. So it definitely, it is what it is. But avoid seeming judgmental. In order to communicate effectively with someone, you don't have to like them or agree with their ideas, their values, or opinions. However, you do need to set aside your judgment and withholding blame and criticism in order to fully understand a person. The most difficult communication, when successfully executed, can lead to the most unlikely and profound connection with someone. Also, show your interest, okay? I mean, really, with that being said, nod occasionally, smile at the person, make sure your posture is open and inviting, okay, not on the defense. You know, and encourage the speaker to continue with small verbal comments like, yes, or really, oh, that's right, oh, that's true, or even, hood, that's what's up. I mean, but just at least let the list communicating to you as a listener, at least let them know you're a bit interested in what they're talking about, really. I mean, I think that those are a few ways that you can effectively communicate while listening, because listening is definitely a form of communication. So next up, I'm going to have a little bit more about this topic and some other things that's going on in and around town. So sit back, relax, and I hope you're chilling. I want to hear how your day is going and how you're enjoying the show. I want to say what's up to a couple people who are listening to the show, who are tuned in right now. So what's up to you guys? And I really definitely appreciate you for all that you do, and tuning in each and every week right here on Interviews with the Stars. I'll be right back. I am your host, Miss Diamond. I'm going to hit y'all up with some Summertime by Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff, because I know y'all enjoying the day, because I am.
Drums, please.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. Buzz. But back then I didn't really know what it was. But now I see what happened is the way that people respond to summer madness. The weather is hot and girls are dressing less and checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody goes. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you beeping at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hip you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Yet, hustle to the mall to get me a short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair. Cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more. Cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends as y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kissed. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch. While the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout, it looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop, a fly from the beauty salon. Every moment frontin' and maxin', chillin' in the car, they spent all day waxin', leanin' to the side, but you can't speed through 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
Welcome back. That was I Want to Be Your Man by Zapp and Roger. And, of course, that's my jam. So thank you for that listener who called and asked for that song to be played. Of course, you know, I'm going to hit y'all up with some hot jams and give y'all the best topics around and, of course, the best interviews with the stars. So with that being said, next hour I have Mr. Wayne Lindsay. Please, 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 don't be late for that one. About 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and I'll have him right here comfortable in the studio to answer your questions, to talk to you, and to give you everything all about him. You don't want to miss that one. So we're going to talk about, and we're already talking about, effective communication skills, okay? So we're going to talk about emotional awareness and how that goes right along with effective communication skills, okay? So understand that emotions play an important role in the way we communicate at home and at work. It's the way you feel more than the way you think, the motives you communicate or to make decisions. The way you react emotionally driven, nonverbal cues affect both how you understand other people and how they understand you. I mean, if you're out of touch with your feelings and you don't understand how you feel or why you feel that way, you have a hard time communicating your feelings and your needs to others. This can be very frustrating to someone else and even to yourself. It can result in frustration, misunderstandings, and, of course, conflict, which we all want to try to avoid. Nobody's perfect, but you know what? It happens. But when you don't address what's really bothering you, you often become embroiled in petty squabbles instead, arguing with your spouse about how the towel should be hung up in the bathroom or why he didn't let the toilet seat down, why you didn't cut the lights off, you know, just petty stuff. Or even with a coworker about whose turn it is to restock the copier, whose turn it is to take that phone call that's coming in, whose turn it is to call that client back. I mean, when you don't and you're unaware of your emotional and your emotions, it can become very frustrating. I mean, emotional awareness provides you the tools needed to understand both yourself and other people and the real messages they are communicating to you. Although knowing your own feelings may seem simple, many people ignore or try to sedate strong emotions like anger, sadness, and even fear. Hello. I mean, it's cool. You can be fearful about some things, but just understand that, okay? But your ability to communicate depends on being connected to those feelings. I mean, if you're afraid of strong emotions or if you insist on communicating only in a rational level, then it will impair your ability to fulfill or to fully understand others, creatively problem solve. It'll hinder you from resolving conflicts or even build an affectionate connection with someone. When you don't understand your emotions, all of that a major role and a major factor. But, you know, how can emotional awareness improve effective communication? Well, emotional awareness is the conscious of your moment-to-moment emotional experience and the ability to manage all of your feelings appropriately. You know, that's the basis for effective communication, really. Emotional awareness helps you understand and empathize with what's really troubling other people. It helps you understand yourself, including what's really troubling you and what you really want. Emotional awareness also helps you stay motivated to understand and empathize with the person you're interacting with, even if you don't like them or their message. It is what it is. I mean, it helps you communicate clearly and effectively even when delivering negative messages. That's right. I said it. Everything ain't positive. I'm just keeping it 100 with y'all today, okay? And emotional awareness also helps you build strong, trust-rewarding relationships, think creatively, solve problems, and resolve conflicts. I mean, when emotional awareness is strongly developed, you'll know what you're feeling without having to think about it. You'll be able to use these emotional cues to understand when someone is really communicating to you and act accordingly. I mean, the goal of effective communication is to find a healthy balance between your intellect and your emotions, between thinking and feeling. How many times have you seen yourself in a situation where you're way more emotional about it than you should be? You're giving too much energy to that situation. You're giving too much energy to what someone else is saying. Well, sometimes you need to stop, think about it, and check yourself because maybe your communication skills are a little bit off. That could be your listening skills, you know, how you perceive what they're saying. When somebody is saying something to you, sometimes they're not attacking you. They're merely telling you their feelings or, you know, just their side or their opinion. And you have to respect that. Respect is so number one when communicating because you don't have to like what somebody is saying. You don't even have to agree, but you have to respect what they're saying. And then if they're being disrespectful, you stay respectful, you know. But, hey, who am I to judge? Who am I to say, you know, effective ways to communicate? Well, I am Miss Diamond, and you have tuned in right here on Interviews with the Stars. Okay, stay tuned. Next up, I have Mr. Wayne Lindsay. He's going to communicate to you all about how wonderful the industry of music is, okay? So sit back, relax. I got you right here. So I'm going to play some Keisha Cole, Sent from Heaven, right here on Interviews with the Stars.
Wondering when it's gonna whole life into a mess. Loving what you thought I could have been.
No rules when you change, and you don't feel as good as you used to before.
And everything you used to say, everything you used to do, went right out the door.
Ooh, no more will you be the one. That's what you tell everyone around you, but you know they've heard it all before. What more can you say?
When love won't let you walk away, and it can't help who left, and you find yourself giving it all away when you think you're in love. 'Cause I'm
Hey, everybody, that was I'm in Love by the wonderful Miss Mary J. Blige. You know, it is my goal to always, always keep you guys feeling good with feel-good music and feel-good topics and, of course, feel-good interviews with stars. So coming up real soon, I have Mr. Wayne Lindsay in the studio. Can't wait to sit down and talk with him. So the topic today was effective communication, okay, and ways to effectively communicate. So I'm just going to give you guys a few little tips, and we're going to have Mr. Wayne Lindsay in the studio, okay? So managing stress. So quick stress relief for effective communication. I mean, to deal with stress during communication, you should recognize when you're becoming stressed. Your body will let you know if your stress is, you know, when you communicate, are your muscles, are your stomach tight, are you sore, your hands clenching, you know, are you sweating, are you forgetting to breathe? I mean, really, you should also take time and take a moment to calm down before deciding to continue on with the conversation, or even, you know what, postpone it, walk away from it. It's just not worth it. I mean, really, you don't ever want to be stressed. So, you know, I'm just trying to teach you ways to manage your stress. Also, bring your senses to rescue and quickly manage stress by taking a few deep breaths, relaxing, you know, recalling a soothe image. Just think about it, you know. Each person responds to stress differently. I'm just trying to help you how to effectively communicate while stressed, you know. Look for humor in the situation. To me, I find everything funny. I mean, how many times have somebody came and they tried to attack you about this situation or that, you know, and you just begin to laugh? Well, that is a way to communicate as well, because you're saying, hold on, I don't want no parts of this. I'm just not interested in the stress you're trying to cause to me while we're talking, you know, with family, with friends, with coworkers, our spouses, whatever. You know, just laugh the situation off. Sometimes things can be definitely funny. Be willing to compromise. That is something that is so major. Some people are just not willing to. They have a one-track mind. They are only on one-way path, and that's their path. You know, they're very closed-minded. So, you know, be willing to compromise. You know, take that into consideration for yourself. And once and for all, agree to disagree. How many times have we not agreed with what somebody said? We don't have to argue with them about it. You don't even have to agree with them. But like I said before, just respect it, okay? So that was our hot topic for today, and it was effective ways to communicate. If you would like to chime in on this topic or any other topic that I have on this show, you can always hit me up on Facebook. My name is Ms. Diamond Hot Topics. Also, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram by tweeting me or, you know, IDing me at Ms. Diamond Hot Topics as well. I would love to hear from you. Stay tuned. Next up, we have in the studio Mr. Wayne Lindsay. I don't know if y'all been waiting, but I have. Okay? So stay tuned right here on Interviews with the Stars.
I said, now do you hear me?
I surely do.
Good, Dad.
Let me add some reverb.
Why?
It'll make it nicer for you.
Oh. Okay, that's good.
You like that one?
Yeah. I want to see it.
Okay.
Hey, oh, dee, dee, oh, 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 oh. No, not good.
You don't like that one?
No.
Is it too much?
Yeah.
How about now? I'm pulling it back.
All right.
Is that better?
Yeah.
All right.
Daddy?
Yes, baby.
Would you turn on the music now?
Yes, Lonnie. All right, count us in.
One, two, three. Hit it, Dad!
That was so cute. So, everyone, welcome, welcome, welcome to the studio. Mr. Wayne Lindsay, our wonderful special guest today. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you very much.
Oh, you are welcome. So how you doing on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday?
It's a beautiful Thursday. I'm having a good time. I've been hanging out with my kids today. And matter of fact, you know, my daughter's here with me now. Interestingly enough, she's a lot older. And say hello, Lonnie.
Hello.
Well, welcome, yes. Mr. Lindsay and Ms. Lonnie to the studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so we want to let your fans know just a little bit about you. So you are definitely one of the best keyboardists out there, producers, and you've worked with wonderful people such as Stevie Wonder, Babyface, and everybody knows about American Idol.
Yes. And, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Beg your pardon?
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and right before American Idol, we were on Jay Leno Tonight Show for the last 4 years, and that was a lot of fun as well.
So how exactly, you know, when did you get started into music? How did you know that music was for you, or, you know, playing the keyboard, or, you know, how did that come about?
Well, my dad was a minister. And we had pianos in the churches that he pastored. And so that's when I first was exposed to it. I have pictures of me playing. Matter of fact, there's a picture on the CD of me playing when I was in baby shoes. And then they bought me a toy organ for Christmas when I was 5. And I gravitated toward it instantly. And they knew I could play, so they bought me a piano at 6, and I started lessons then. So it's the only thing I've ever considered doing. And, so I've always known this is what I wanted to do.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So are you, okay, so someone of your caliber, do you teach others how to play instruments, or have you decided to start teaching your children as they were growing up that, hey, I think an instrument is what you should play?
Well, nobody ever forced it on me, so I never forced it on them. You know, that being said, they had access to instruments their entire lives. You know, I bought my son his first drum set when he was 3, and he had about 2 or 3 keyboards, you know, before then even, you know. But now he plays little keyboards, and he's starting to play late in life. But he's a gospel rapper, so the music bug did catch him. So he's producing, and, you know, but I never forced any of them to play. And Lonnie is a jazz vocal major at Howard University right now. She's always been able to sing, and she just kind of started playing on her own, too. She plays a little more piano than Courtney does.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful to, you know, come from a musically grounded family. I mean, you know, when, you know, our greatest influences come from the people around us, and, of course, you know, seeing you their whole lives, it's like, wow, you know, Dad is doing this, so that's something that I can do. So growing up, I know your father was a minister, but who were some of your greatest influences in the music industry?
Well, growing up, you know, of course, Stevie Wonder was a big one for me because my brothers are 8 and 9 years older than I am. So they were listening to a lot of music, you know, that I wouldn't have been exposed to otherwise, like the Persuasion, Street Corner Symphony, and, you know, Stevie Wonder records, and Billy Preston, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Parliament. You know, then my piano teacher was letting me hear people like Earl Garner and Bud Powell. So on the jazz side, I was getting that kind of exposure, and then funk-wise, you know, all that other stuff that was a little bit above me. And then the stuff that was, you know, my contemporary stuff too, like, you know, Daz Band and Barcades and all that kind of funk, you know, that was out in the 70s and 80s, you know, when I was coming up.
Oh, great, great. So, I mean, as a producer and an arranger and songwriter, name some of the people, or can you tell us some of the people that you haven't had the opportunity to work with that you would love to work with?
Well, you know, there's a lot of young talent that's out here, and a lot of them I have not worked with yet. And then a lot of the young ones I have, too. I mean, I don't know if Beyonce counts in the young category anymore. She's been around a while. But, you know, comes my way musically, you know. As far as the people that I grew up wanting to play with, I've definitely crossed everybody off of that list, you know. I have been fortunate, you know. Ray Charles is on that list. Stevie Wonder, Earth, Wind & Fire is on that list. You know, I didn't get to work with Marvin Gaye. He passed before, you know, but I was a member of Maze featuring Frankie Beverly, which was, you know, one of the groups that I really loved when I was coming up. And, yeah, so pretty much, you know, everybody, you know, there's a lot of people I've gotten the chance to work with, you know, Sting and Aretha Franklin, you know, just tons of people. And it's been really cool. You know, Herbie Hancock, you know, I've been really blessed in that way because I have worked with a lot of the great talents on the planet. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been nice and rewarding.
Amazing, amazing. I mean, I've asked a few people, a few of the fans, you know, tell me what you can about Miss Lindsay. And, you know, some of them say, oh, my God, he played for America. He played for American Idol. Or, you know, oh, my God, he was on The Tonight Show. And it's like, you know, to see, you know, to see your fans really excited about what you do, you know, that must feel awesome for you.
Yeah, it really does, you know, because they are quite loyal, my fans, and they do support me. And a lot of them, you know, I actually know personally. I don't have, you know, 300,000 Twitter followers or nothing, you know. So a lot of the people that follow me, I actually get to know sometimes. And they are really true supporters. You know, they come out and see me play, and they stay engaged with me. And that's a nice thing. You know, I have tried to do music that maintains a certain integrity. And and so sometimes it's not always for the broader audience in some instances. Although the broader audience would love it, it's just a matter of getting it to them. But my group seems to be a little eclectic.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, to me, we want to be able to do everything we want to do in life and enjoy doing it. I mean, it seems like you've done a lot of things in the industry.
Yeah, I have.
So, you know, with nonstop touring and scheduling and just constant studio work, your 2010 solo project. Tell us about, you know, that time and how that came about and how you began working on that and just said, you know what, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to have my own solo project right now.
Well, it really was a very, very long process because at the time I really was very busy on the road and producing others and doing a lot of other things. So my record was kind of like not a priority. And with that being the case, it took a long time. And then, you know, so I actually worked on that record a long time. There was about maybe five or six more songs that I had cut for the album because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. You know, time would pass, and I figured, all right, I need to redo this or whatever. So anyway, it took until about 2010 for me to actually settle down and just bring it to a close. And so that's kind of how it came about. That's why, you know, like Lonnie, the song you just played the clip of, you know, she's 19 now. When she first cut that, she must have been 3 or 4. But it was in the can for a long time. And because that's the good thing I've been told is that my music is somewhat timeless. So when you listen to it, it doesn't sound like I worked on some of it so long ago. So it's held up well, it seems.
Yes, yes, and it doesn't seem like your music has aged. You know, I can listen to one of your songs, and I can't tell if it was written in 1980 or, you know, 2010. You know,
right,
it hasn't
aged.
It doesn't have that sound to it. So, I love that. So your actual project, though, it's not, you know, just one genre. It's not just jazz. You know, it has a different feel to it.
It does. Yeah, it's a combination of, you know, my influences. I did a record on Virgin in 1991 with my ex-wife, Lynn Fitmont. And they had actually given me the record deal as a pianist. And I was going to do one type of record, and then I decided it would be good to combine my wife's gift and my gift to keep the family pointing in one direction, because our son was, Courtney, was like a year old at the time. So anyway, I only ended up doing two instrumentals on the album, and the other seven are vocal songs. But at that time, you know, I dealt with the record companies and their rigid slots that they want you to fall into. You know, you need to be, and they had a problem with that with our group. We were called Lindsay. The album was called Perfect Love. But with it being somewhat instrumental and then she was vocal, they didn't really know how to market us or what to do with us. So I decided I wanted to do this record on my own label so I could have the flexibility and the authority or autonomy to be able to decide that I would have more than one genre, or, you know, have rap songs on the album next to vocal songs and then instrumental songs. So that's kind of how it ended up being what it is, you know, because I'm a varied artist, you know, my influences are varied. And I wanted to express all of that instead of just being, okay, this is smooth jazz for, you know, for what used to be the wave, and then be done with it, you know.
Yes, yes. So, like, so, you know, your fans may not know, but you're an international recording artist as well. I mean, you know, that duo was released and also really appreciated in the UK. So, I mean, congratulations to you on that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. One other thing that your fans, go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm listening.
No, I was going to say, one of your fans asked, I gave them the opportunity to ask you a question. So the question says, as you served as the musical director for the Oprah Winfrey Show, how did that gig come about, and were you excited about it before you started?
Yeah, that's interesting. I was in Chicago doing Jennifer Hudson's Christmas special with Ricky Miley, a good friend of mine, and he also is, you know, one of the, I would say, the top musical director in television today. And we had done Oprah Winfrey with him being the musical director for a for her block party that she had. And we went back to Chicago doing Jennifer Hudson's Christmas special, and Oprah's show contacted him to do it, and he was busy, so he passed it on to me, which was real cool. And I really enjoyed it. It was a nice experience and a nice opportunity, and it went well.
I like that. I like that. You know, there are, you know, I say all the time to people, there's so much room for success. You know, there's no need to try to hinder the next person from getting to their goals or trying to get to where they need to be. So it's always helpful, you know, to reach back and to give back to others. And, you know, with Ricky Minor being, you know, one of your longtime friends and, you know, passing something as major as that is to you, you know, that really means something about, you know, you two and your friendship and, you know, and how strong of a influence to him you are.
Yeah, he and I have been together now for 32 years, and so we've made a lot of music together, and, you know, it's a great relationship. You know, he's, I consider him part of my family. We were neighbors, and, you know, I joined Whitney Houston's band in 89 when he took over as musical director, and that was the beginning of a lot of, I would say, full-time working together, because before it was a little more scattered. But we've been off and on for, like I said, 32 years now. So.
Okay. So when working with different bands and different television shows, I mean, such as, you know, working for Motown Live and Fame, you know, with working with The Tonight Show, I mean, how different is that from working with shows like American Idol, from just regular concert performances? Or do you look at working for shows like American Idol as, like, concert performances?
You know, that's a good question. Those shows, they are different kind of shows, you know, but basically a lot of these shows, you know, have been pretty much with Ricky in that capacity because that's what we do. We basically, Whitney Houston's band ended up becoming the Ricky Miner Band. With the core elements being me, Paul, and Paul Jackson Jr. and Ricky Miner. We go back the furthest. And so as we've gone from show to show, a lot of these different guys have come in and become permanent members. And so we've picked members up along the way, like Teddy Campbell is the drummer. I think he might have started somewhere around Motown Live or so. And Dave DeLome is the keyboardist, guitarist. And he started a little later. Kevin McCart is the percussionist. So basically one thing that makes us Indie Man is that we do have a consistent sound. And we have a reputation for delivering that sound, you know, consistently. So therefore a lot of the artists are comfortable when they know that Ricky's band is doing it. So that is, you know, given us opportunities to do a lot of these different television shows with major artists and then others like American Idol where you come in and they're not, you know, they're not so well known.
So with, I mean, with, you know, working with different bands, and working with, I mean, a multitude of people. Tell us some of your favorite moments when working with some of these shows, such as American Idol.
Let me think. I guess one of my favorite memories is around the time that Ray Charles died. The movie Ray came out around close to that same time. And we did a television show that Ricky was the musical director for called Genius, A Night for Ray Charles. So there were a lot of different people on the show, Mary J. Blige, Usher, B.B. King, Billy Preston, Al Green, Nora Jones, a whole lot of different people. But basically I got a chance to be the piano voice of Ray's music. You know, because I pretty much played behind everybody except Nora Jones. She played for herself. But, you know, doing that, I got a chance to play all of Ray's music all night long. You know, it was just a great show. And I considered it quite an honor to, you know, get a chance and represent him in his music from a keyboard standpoint. And, I had a good night. I felt good about it. You know, there's some good stuff on there. And then, you know, there's so many, I mean, that come to mind. Another one would be maybe HBO Live with Whitney Houston from South Africa. You know, that was a special performance. And, you know, playing behind Whitney was really one of my highlights because she was at the top of her game. And it was nothing like it, you know, her voice. And me being the pianist, you know, I accompanied her a lot. Even when she would talk between songs, you know, I would just make up stuff and just kind of flow with her like I might do in church, you know. And so, you know, playing for her. Of course, Aretha Franklin, I played with her a lot earlier. You know, that was a big highlight, you know. And then, of course, you know, I mean, I could keep going. Stevie Wonder in Madrid in 1993, no, in Valencia, Spain, we played in a bull ring a lot, around 3 days from his birthday. You know, he's a guitarist, you know, so... I'm just on stage and I'm thinking about, you know, my dreams as a child. And it just really touched me that they were actually coming true. I'm like, wow, I'm actually playing these songs that I grew up on, you know, Love's in Need of Love Today. And it just kind of hit me. I got all choked up. But, yeah, I've been really blessed.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. So, you know, out of those individuals, you know, just those few, you know, who was your favorite to work with? I know that might be hard, but who was one of your favorite ones to work with?
It is hard. That's a hard question. it all depends, you know. I guess, I don't know. I really, I couldn't sing. I mean, it depends, you know. There are things about them, you know, that make some more preferable than others, you know, for example, how they treat us on the road, you know, because they don't always take care of you the same. So although musically one might get a 10, you know, from a from a tech trivia standpoint, they might get a five.
Okay.
You know.
That's understandable.
Yeah, I won't go into who wakes where when it comes to that. But I will say that, you know, Whitney took great care of us. I mean, she was, you know, she really allowed me to see the world for free in a first-class type way. You know, we stayed in great hotels. You know, she just really, really, you know, treated you like you were in Whitney Houston's band. And that meant something back then, you know what I mean? You know, so
yes,
that was,
I know.
You know, that was really cool because a lot of times, you know, especially nowadays, it seems as though a lot of the artists don't seem to give the bands the same kind of love that we used to get, you know, from the big artists, it seems, you know. But, you know, that's what I've heard.
Okay. So what are some of the places that, you know, that, you know, like I say, you're an international celebrity or star, whatever you may call yourself, musician, but what are some of the places that you love to visit the most on tour?
Well, I always like Amsterdam. You know,
okay.
Amsterdam is just, you know, a really cool vibe, you know. I love London. It all depends. I mean, Tokyo. I love playing in South Africa. South Africa is real cool. I've been there about five or six times with various artists. Cape Town, to be specific, I really like Cape Town. I love Brazil. Brazil was off the hook. Rio was really cool. And, you know, I like a lot of places. You know, it depends. Norway was really cool. You know, Thailand. I've been some great places, and you know, that's another part of it. I like France too, and Spain. I mean, all of them, really. It just depends. I'm not crazy about German food, but I've basically learned, you know, as I travel the world, a lot of times I will eat Indian food because it's really consistent from one country to another. You know.
Okay.
So you can always go to an Indian restaurant and order what you like, and it's going to taste like what you expect it to. So that's one of my tricks.
Good, great. So what is some of your favorite places just, you know, here in the States to perform at?
Well, you know, like I said, I used to be in Mays. So when being in Mays and going to New Orleans was always a special place to go for us.
Okay.
Because they really, you know, Frankie did live in New Orleans there, and it seems like people in Louisiana adopt the band, you know. The second home for Mays is New Orleans, basically. And that was the first time I'd ever, you know, experienced getting mobbed. I mean, we drove in limos, and people just jumped all on top of the car, and it was, like, crazy, you know.
Pandemonium, yes.
Yeah, it was something else, you know. And it depends on the city, you know, with the artist, you know, because some artists get more love in, you know, in certain cities. L.A. is not the best place to play, it seems, a lot of times, because people seem to be used to everything in L.A. You know, they don't seem to have the same appreciation that you find when you go to a city that doesn't see the talent all the time. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. I've never heard that before, but then, you know, when I think about it, you know, they might be immune to just seeing, you know, celebrity faces and knowing everything that's going on, but, you know, I'm sure that, you know, there are a lot of fans that you have in L.A., so they would appreciate, you know, anywhere you perform.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to say that the audiences aren't good. It's just a little different when you go to some of those places that don't get, you know, that everybody doesn't go to as much. They just seem to be a little hungrier for it. But,
yeah.
You know, Yeah, so, you know, you know, London is a really cool place to play, too, as far as, you know, their vibe over there is just really, really different. It's cool. They really like the music a lot, and they study it. And, for example, the first time I went there was 85 with Frankie, right when Back in Stride was out. You know, that was my first big record with the band. And they had a whole different chant that they would do, you know. Like in the States, we do Joy and Pain, and the drum machine is going, go ahead, go ahead. That's the States, you know. Then you get in London, and they're doing this, oh, or they do a whole different, you know, little chant thing. And so that was really interesting to experience as well.
Wow, wow. Well, you know what? I can definitely say, you know, for years, you know, I've grown up on that music, you know, Maze and Frankie Beverly, and I know that, you know, any concert for years I went to with my mom, that was our thing. Her and I, we would go, you know, of course, you know, the band would be wearing white, or, you know, Frankie would be wearing white. So that was me and my mom singing. I mean, what I can tell you about, you know, those type of concerts and that kind of feel-good music is it keeps you on your feet. It keeps you feeling good. You know, you could be going through anything, but you hear something like, you know, Back in Stride Again, whatever you're going through is over. Or Running Away.
Yeah. That was one of my favorites, too. Yeah, you know, I did the Live in L.A. DVD with Frankie. And, of course, that was in L.A. You know, whenever we play here with Frankie, you know, it doesn't feel like, you know, L.A. The people really, you know, they go in hard for Frankie. And, that was a lot of fun. You know, they closed the amphitheater, by the way.
Yes, they did. Sad to hear that.
Yeah, that was really sad.
It's okay, but you got an opportunity to play there. And you have a bunch of memories from there. To pass down to your kids and... I can't call them kids. You're a grown-up.
Yeah,
so I'm going to give your fans a little treat. I'm going to play Magic Theme for them.
All right. Let me tell them about that. Should I tell them about it?
You should.
All right. Magic Theme is the first song on my CD, A Song Without Words, and it was originally written as a theme song to Magic Johnson's talk show, The Magic Hour. And so it has that TV kind of vibe on it. Fred Wesley from James Brown fame is on trombone. He takes the trombone solo at the end. And Teddy Campbell's on drums. Paul Jackson Jr. is on guitar. I'm playing guitar as well. And a host of my friends are on horns. And so anyway, Magic's theme kicks the album off. All right, Miss Diamond.
So there you have it. He has just introduced the first song on his theme, Magic Theme. We're going to play it right here on Interviews with the Stars. Stay tuned. I have my special guest in studio, Mr. Wayne Lindsay, right here on Baker Success Radio. And there you have it. We are back. Today's special guest, Mr. Wayne Lindsay in the studio, and that was Magazine.
Yes.
So let me tell you about the first time I heard that song.
Uh-huh.
Well,
yes.
Yes. So I put together, one of the things that I do is I do brand imaging where I help artists, you know, brand their image. So whatever avenue they may need. So I was putting together a fashion show for a local clothing designer. And during the cocktail hour, I asked someone, you know, can I have some good music? I want some jazz. I want some feel-good music. And some of the things that I wanted before that was to preview the music. And they brought me this song. And I was just like, man, that'll be awesome for the cocktail hour. So I ended up changing the whole theme of the cocktail hour from R&B to just straight jazz. And, I mean, this song right here was one of the last songs that I played. It kind of got everybody pumped and ready, you know, for the actual fashion show. And everybody loved it. So this is one of my personal favorites.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. That's good to hear.
Yeah, that's feel-good music.
Thank you. Yeah.
So what type of environment, or do you have to be in a specific type of environment to write specific songs?
I think it's less about the environment and more about the mental space, you know.
Okay.
Depending on how I'm feeling, it's going to determine what kind of song I'm writing, you know. And so it really doesn't matter where I am. Although I guess I need to have the right environment to be able to write, period. I mean, you know, I can't necessarily feel like writing, you know, while I'm in the middle of a party and all this stuff is going on. So, you know, I need the right environment from that perspective. But, you know, the music kind of comes out depending on how I'm feeling, you know.
Okay. So what type of, tell us some of the projects that you're working on right now.
Well, one thing I just finished was I produced the additional music for Debbie Allen and James Ingram's musical Brothers of the Night that's been touring this summer. I did like 5 or 6 songs, and that was a lot of fun. That was performed in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Charlotte, North Carolina, Boston, and L.A. And I think they're working on adding additional cities. But I just finished that not too long ago. And I've been traveling a little bit this summer because it's been a busy year with Leno, then American Idol, then straight into Debbie Allen. So I'm back home now, and I'm starting to work on a second album with my son, a gospel rap album. And then I'm planning to do a Christmas album that hopefully I can have ready before the year is out for this Christmas. So that's what's on the agenda right now.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the project that you're working on with your son. I mean, it's a gospel rap album, correct?
Yes. Yeah, he's a gospel rapper. He goes by the name Sunwoh Love, S-U-N-W-H-O-A. One word and then love is the second word. The first album that he has out now is called Kingdom Influence, and it's available on iTunes. And he has videos and stuff up on YouTube if you want to go check him out. But, you know, he used to be a secular rapper until he really committed his life to God, to Christ, I should say. And once he did that, then he just took all of that street rap and turned it into gospel, so it was really quality stuff, you know. A lot of people criticize gospel rap sometimes because it can be a little out of place if the guy doesn't really understand the history of rap, you know. So, yeah, Courtney's well-grounded, and it's going to be really nice. I didn't really work on his first album with him. Some of his friends did it, so we're looking forward to collaborating. I haven't really started my side of it yet. He's been doing the initial production and coming up with the stuff, and I'm going to take it from him and then put my thing on it.
Oh, okay. Well, definitely we want to give your fans an opportunity to follow you and follow your project. So give your fans the link to your Facebook page.
It's Wayne Lindsay, WAYNELINSEY. And there are two pages. The first one is the personal page, and that's kind of already full, so I'm really trying to encourage people to like my music page, and so I can increase the following on it. They both come up under Wayne Lindsay. It's important, though, that you don't put a D or an A in Lindsay, LINSEY. And then, you know, Twitter and Instagram are both the same thing, at Wayne Lindsay. And same thing, WAYNELINSEY.
Yes, yes. So we love, you know, love the pictures and, you know, everything that you're doing online as well. So, you know, we want to thank you for giving your fans an opportunity to reach out to you. And, you know, like you said, some people are really loyal to you and, you know, what you're doing. So by giving them an opportunity to interact with you on social media is major and it's huge.
Yeah, I kind of like it. It's kind of cool.
It's something totally different, I'm sure.
Yes, yes,
from, you know,
yes.
From where technology has come from.
Yeah. I've kind of watched the whole thing in slow. Go ahead.
You said in slow.
No, I said I've kind of watched the whole thing explode. You know, I've been kind of doing it from the beginning, so.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. It's been around for a while, and, you know, social media is definitely taking off. So, you know, we want to say hello to your fans, of course, and shout them out as well, and all our loyal listeners to interviews with the stars as well. So I have another question from another one of your listeners. They said that you've worked with Ray Charles, and you've also worked with Guinness, or Genius, I'm sorry, A Night for Ray. What was that like, and how did you know at that time that working with Ray Charles would lead you to where you are now?
Well, you know, I can't really say working with Ray Charles did lead me to where I am now. It was just another part of my career, really, you know. Mm-hmm. And when we did the Genius for The Night for Ray Charles, he had already passed. So I didn't work with him then. On that show, I actually was, you know, his hands. But the first time I worked with Ray Charles was a long time ago on the Lou Rawls Telethon, Parade of Stars, you know, the Budweiser marathon they used to have back then.
Oh, yeah, classic.
And then Ray was on the show then. And then I worked with him a few times over the years. One of the last times was in D.C. We did a performance with the Ricky Miner Band back in Ray Charles. And so we did a whole concert with him, and I was playing organ, and he was like 5 feet in front of me playing piano. And I actually have the whole rehearsal on videotape. I had my camera sitting on top of my organ. And so I got a really good shot of him, you know, just playing and singing and, you know, being real, you know, being himself. So that's another one of my hobbies, you know, shooting video while I perform. So I got like a lot of archives over the years of various shows that I've done, you know, from a Richard Pryor tribute to Muhammad Ali's 50th birthday to Christopher Reeve's Celebration of Hope, you know, after he had his accident. So one day I'd like to put together some type of documentary or something and just share that with the people, you know, if I can get around to it. It's a lot on my plate.
I understand that, and I was just going to say, you know, that'll be awesome for the fans, you know, to give them a extremely up-close and personal look at what you do, you know, from your side, you know, of the lens.
Yeah.
So tell me a little about A Song Without Words.
Uh-huh. The album, the CD, or the song?
The song.
Well, that song basically was inspired by a real-life story. I was playing in a club in D.C. when I was at Howard, and this old cat came into the club, and he was like, you know, son, if you want to make some money, you got to sing. You can't make no money playing the piano. And so that's kind of what the song is about, you know, basically, you know, saying you're singing a song without words. Because that's what I do. I play piano. I don't really have words, you know. But although I do write words, but, you know, I just thought it would be something fun to do, to talk about it. And that's what the first verse said. And that was the try to tell me it cannot be done. It says a song without words. It ain't happening, son. It says the people want something that they can sing. The people need words so they can do their thing. They want to hear your voice singing high and low, moving their bodies, moving to and fro, hearts beating faster, giving it all they got. They can't stop dancing until the very last drop. Although I could be wrong, I think I'll never see the people all out there bumping to a song without words, you know. So that's kind of
amazing, amazing. So I'm going to play a song without words just to give them, you know, a little treat on how Mr. Wayne Lindsay gets down right here on Faces of Success Radio. We'll be right back.
One of my elders had to tell me you cannot be done. You sing a song without words, it ain't happening. But he said the people want something that they can sing. The people need words so they can do their thing. They wanna hear your voice sing high and low. Bend their bodies, moving to and fro. Hearts beating faster, giving it all they got. They can't stop dancing till the very last drop. Although I could be wrong, I think I'll never see. Although I could be wrong, I think I'll never see the people all out there bumping to a song without words. Bumping to a song without words.
Come without words. the spinach and juice too.
Oh yeah, that was definitely a hot one right there.
Thank you, thank you.
Enjoyed that.
Appreciate it.
Yes, that was requested by one of your Facebook friends.
Okay.
So I just wanted to be able to play that for them.
Thank you, thank you. And thank you all to all the Facebook friends who've been following and supporting me too. I appreciate that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, you've done some amazing things. So you've given back in some amazing ways as well, and allowed people to follow you. So what type of advice would you give some of the young people who are trying to break into the music industry and just play an instrument? You know, everybody doesn't want to be a singer or a rapper.
I would say as an instrumentalist, especially, you know, try to be as prepared as you can possibly be. And that includes learning how to read music so you can be, so you can expand your options. That's one thing that sets me apart from a lot of the other guys is that they don't read music, and therefore they can't walk into a situation where they need to read music. Say, for example, an American Idol, you know, where everything is changing constantly. And you don't have the time that you do in church to learn songs before Sunday, you know. They pull the music out and you play it and it's done and you move on and go to the next song. And so I would say be as prepared as you can as a professional. And also learn how to be on time because in professional environments, that's not tolerated, you know, showing up late, you know. If you have a 1 o'clock downbeat, then you need to be in place ready to play at 1 o'clock. Instead of showing up at 1:10 or calling saying I'm stuck in traffic, you need to prepare for all of that, you know, to do certain types of work in this business.
That's important as well for people to know and to understand that people's time is valuable.
Yes. Yes.
That's good. So let's talk about your studies at Howard University.
Yes, that was one of the highlights, you know, being at Howard University, you know, black college. I was given a full scholarship to play in the Howard University Jazz Ensemble, and I was blessed to play with a lot of great musicians at the time. Jerry Allen, who's pretty famous jazz pianist, was the pianist in the band before me. She graduated the year before I got there. And Wallace Roney was in the band with me. He's plays with the Miles Davis Revisited band. I forget what they're called. But Greg Osby was in the band. There's just a lot of great musicians at the time. So Howard was and D.C., I consider myself to be from Atlanta and D.C. because I actually moved to D.C. my senior year of high school, so it had a great impact on who I am musically, you know, just being in D.C. as a native as opposed to just coming a year later as a Howard student changed everything, you know. I was a part of the D.C. Youth Orchestra. I was in the D.C. Youth Chorale. You know, I worked with street theater. Got an opportunity to dance for a while. I just was exposed to so much music in just that 1 year. It just was really incredible, not to mention go-go, what that did to my life, you know.
That's amazing from, you know, to making a transition from Atlanta all the way to D.C., you know, that's a total different area of the world.
Yeah, it is. It is. I loved it.
Yeah, so from there, word of mouth really spread quickly, and that's how you landed shows with Aretha Franklin?
Well, actually, in D.C., I actually played with a band called Starpoint. They had a big song, Object of My Desire, and Restless were two of their big hits. But I did an album called All Night Long, which was one of my first records on a major label, and that was when I was like 19 or so. And then I started playing with Bobby Bloom, and I moved to New York and was living with him for a while. And his roommate was the bass player with Weather Report at the time, Victor Bailey, who had taken Jaco Pastorius' place. So, you know, those were the things that I did before I moved to L.A. When I got to L.A., one of my first gigs was Lola Falana and Billy Davis and Marilyn McCoo. I was doing both of those gigs at the same time. And then I auditioned for Maze not long after that, and I had to quit, and I joined Maze in 84.
Like I said, one of the most classic groups out here. So, yeah, you know, many people have seen your work and, you know, been a part of, you know, the influence that you've had on the industry.
Yeah, I've been
blessed. Yes, you have. Yes, you have. And like I said, we love your music and, you know, we love everything that you're doing. So you've been given the name Biggie. Who exactly gave you that nickname?
Actually, I was given that name originally by one of the members of Starpoint, one of the brothers. His name is George Phillips. And we were in the studio cutting that record, and I was doing what I always do, making Ziggy noises. So he's like, I'm going to start calling you Ziggy, and he kind of did. But, you know, only the band called me that. But when I joined Maze, the guitarist in the band, his name was Wayne. And so they were like, we can't have two Waynes in the band. So they started trying to make nicknames up for me to give me a name, and that's what I told them. I was like, okay, they already called me Ziggy. So Brother Zig is what Frank refers to me as most of the time, you know, on stage. And that's kind of, you know, I can tell when people know me from Maze because they call me Ziggy.
They call you Ziggy. Okay. Oh, hey, you know, oh, I saw your work, Ziggy.
That's it.
Yes. So also, one of your fans said that you named popular jazz saxophonist Boney James.
Yes, I did. And that happened around 1987, I believe. We were in London with Randy Crawford. We were both playing in her band. And we were on the back of the bus cracking jokes about how the exchange rate was so bad that our per diem didn't really go that far. So I said, if you're going to end up being skinny, I'm going to have to start calling you Boney James. And then everybody started laughing, you know. And I was like, I like that name. So we got back to L.A., and he was working in my band. So I started introducing him as Boney James at the clubs on my shows. And then it just kind of stuck. So when he got his record deal, and they told him that they thought that they should try to call him something other than what his real name is. And he told them, like I did, you know, hey, they called me Boney James, and they were like, we like that. And so the rest is history.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being a part of the show today and, you know, giving Faith of Success the opportunity to give your fans a little bit more and a closer look at what you're doing. And, you know, I just want to appreciate you and tell you much success to everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the opportunity as well. It's been a lot of fun.
No problem. So what I'm going to do for your fans is I'm going to play Bookends. So you want to talk a little bit about Bookends before I play that?
Yeah, so Bookends is a song that I wrote for Miles Davis. He asked me to write him something in six, and so I did. Are you playing the interlude and the song, or are you starting with just the song? Which one? How are you doing it?
Just the song.
Okay, well, the interlude,
Well, how about this? I'll play the interlude and the song. How about that?
Oh, that'll be good, because then they get the whole thing. Basically, Miles Davis allowed National Public Radio to record one of his rehearsals for the first time, and they just happened to be rehearsing the song that I wrote for him called Bookends. And so the interlude is an excerpt from that interview where he's actually imitating me and talking about me. And so I used that. Also, he ended up doing my album cover. He drew a picture of me while we were in the studio, and I used it on the album cover. So, yeah, this is Bookends. It's in six. And the first thing when I gave it to him, he says, how do you count that, motherfucker? Excuse me. But that's what he wanted to know. And so that's Bookends.
Okay. All right, so more on Mr. Wayne Lindsay. You can find that on Facebook on my page, Ms. Diamond Hot Topics, and also on Mr. Lindsay's page as well on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So make sure you follow him, you tweet him, and you take pictures and tag him, of course. So I'm going to play Bookends right here on Facebook Success Radio. We want to thank today's special guest, Mr. Wayne Lindsay.
Wait a minute. Bobby, it's in six. 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3. Don't say it. No, this is what I'm praying. Charlie, Wayne writes in six. It's church, sanctified music, right? Oh, he's always doing. Like a train. And that motherfucker talks the same way. When you write, you made the same way.
Well, down, my day, your day.